Vladimir Duterte. Welcome to CBS Mornings On The Go. Ahead on this Monday, July 13th, we're remembering Senator Lindsey Graham, who died suddenly over the weekend. So what is his legacy and who might fill the void? We'll talk with his friend and colleague from South Carolina, Senator Tim Scott. Plus, a health issue for millions of Americans, chronic inflammation. We'll look at new research on how it might affect your mental health and how you can fight the ailment. We'll also check in on summer travel trends and how to get a good deal at the last minute. And in the World Cup, are the best matches happening off the pitch? A fourth-generation matchmaker tells us how some people are using the tournament to find love. And David Begno shares three heartwarming stories for Begno's America. All that and more ahead.
We're going to begin, though. I know you know this, the outpouring of tributes to South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham. After his sudden death, flags have been lowered to half-staff in his honor, including at the White House. Now, Graham was a close ally of President Trump. His office says that he died early Saturday night. He had just returned from a visit to Ukraine. The preliminary cause, they say, is a tear in the main artery from the heart. Caitlin Huey Burns is in Washington with the latest. Caitlin, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Gail. Well, everyone here is shocked, and we're hearing from former presidents, including Democrat Joe Biden, who served with Graham here in the Senate. He said that across their political differences, they did agree on the profound importance of public service. And Republican George W. Bush hailed Graham as a kind and funny man who loved our country and loved serving it. And President Trump said that he spoke with Graham on Saturday night just before he died. And he said his once political rival turned ally was like a member of the family.
Flags are half-staff this morning in a stunned Washington, D.C., following Senator Lindsey Graham's sudden death.
He sounded a little tired, but perfect.
President Trump told Meet the Press Sunday he spoke to Graham before he died Saturday night after the senator returned from a diplomatic visit to Ukraine.
He was like a member of the family to me. It's very tough, actually.
The four-term Republican senator from South Carolina was a former military lawyer and retired Air Force colonel. Known as a foreign policy hawk, he served as a U.S. congressman for 8 years before he was elected to the Senate in 2002. On Sunday, colleagues from both sides of the aisle paid tribute.
No better friend, no tougher adversary.
Graham launched a presidential bid in June 2015.
I have more experience with our national security than any other candidate in this race.
But he dropped out just 7 months later as Donald Trump rose to the top of the race for the GOP nomination.
He's a race-baiting, xenophobic, religious bigot.
But Graham eventually became a strong Trump ally. He was a staunch advocate for the president's Supreme Court picks, notably now Justice Brett Kavanaugh, as Senate Democrats tried to block his nomination.
What you want to do is destroy this guy's life, hold this seat open, and hope you win in 2020.
He also advised the president on key foreign policy matters, most recently as a defender of the U.S. war with Iran.
If they can't reach a deal acceptable to him, then he should finish the job.
President Trump had endorsed Graham's reelection bid for what would have been his fifth term in the Senate. Last month, Graham said this about securing the Republican nomination.
President Trump, I'm coming back to the Senate. In 27, I'm going to win in November, and I'm going to help you change this world and change this country.
Now, as for who will succeed Graham here in the Senate, the Republican governor of South Carolina needs to appoint a temporary replacement, and then there will be a special election held in August to pick who will be the Republican nominee. And President Trump says he has someone in mind, but hasn't yet said who it is.
All right, Caitlin, before we let you go, let me ask you about this. We're learning some new details about Republican Senator Mitch McConnell's health. As you know, he's been absent from the Senate for nearly a month. What are you hearing?
That's right. We're finally learning new details about the former majority leader. He's 84 years old. He released a letter yesterday explaining his absence, saying that he was hospitalized last month after taking a fall. And he shared this image of himself in recovery with his wife by his side. McConnell said he was briefly unconscious, but hadn't broken any bones, suffered a concussion, or had a heart attack or stroke. He also said that he is dealing with a mild case of pneumonia. now. He is currently in a rehabilitation center, so he isn't yet ready to return here to the Senate to cast votes. Vlad.
All right, Caitlin, thank you very much as always. For more on Senator Graham's legacy and what comes next, we're joined by CBS News Chief Washington Analyst Robert Costa. Bob, good morning.
Good morning.
So you've been covering Senator Lindsey Graham for nearly two decades. What kind of legacy does he leave behind?
Vlad, it's quite a legacy that really is the story of the Republican Party over the past 30 years. He was elected to the House of Representatives, part of that Republican wave in 1994, became close to Republicans in the late 90s, going after President Bill Clinton during those impeachment hearings. And then during the Bush administration, was an advocate for the intervention in Afghanistan and Iraq, supported immigration reform for a time, but then over the last decade has fully embraced, even after he was once a rival of him, fully embraced President Donald Trump and become a key confidant.
So what kind of influence did he have in Congress? That's a big part of the conversation that people are having this morning, Bob. The ability for Senator Graham to influence other members of his party and even other members across the other side of the aisle.
His final days are revealing about who he was in the U.S. Senate. He was someone who seemed to always be abroad. He was someone who was an advocate for NATO, for the U.S. role in the world, whether it be in the Middle East, having a strong relationship with Israel or having a strong relationship with European allies. He really wanted America, when I would speak to him over the years, to be a force in the world, to have a muscular foreign policy. And he's someone who was always in the deal. When I would run into him in the Senate and talk to him in the trains below the Capitol, he always seemed to be at the center of the action. This was someone who relished politics. You might dislike his views, you might love his views, but this was someone who was in the action in the American scene.
So, Bob, I know it's still early, but of course, politics continues. Senator Graham's death, along with Senator Mitch McConnell, who remains in a hospital, of course, that is going to have an immediate impact on the current congressional agenda. What are you hearing from your sources about a path forward?
It's a tough time for Congress right now. You look at the Gallup poll, only 1 in 10 of Americans seems to approve of the job Congress is doing, and they have such narrow majorities for the Republicans in both the House and the Senate. And with Senator McConnell hospitalized and now Senator Graham gone, when it comes to the hearings for the possible attorney general, the nominee Todd Blanche, those could be complicated in the coming weeks. You also have President Trump wanting to pass his overhaul of voting, the Save America Act. Will be tougher to find votes for that legislation. And most importantly for Senator Graham, it was always about being a supporter of Ukraine. So to pass Russia sanctions, that could also be tougher, though many Senate sources tell me, as part of a tribute to him, Republicans right now are pushing to pass more sanctions against Russia to honor Senator Graham.
All right, Bob Costa reporting from Washington. Bob, as always, we thank you. Appreciate it.
Senator Tim Scott was a close friend of Graham, serving alongside him for more than 13 years, both of them, as you know, representing the great state of South Carolina. Senator Scott, thank you so much for joining us. I know this is very difficult time for you. I know it must be shocking and emotional, but I've been watching you all weekend, and I hear you say repeatedly that the country might have lost a statesman, but you have lost a friend. And I want to concentrate on the friend part for a second. Connect the dots with us about who he was as a person and why you considered him a friend.
Well, thank you, Gail, so much for starting there with a personal opportunity to share the love I have for my good friend, Lindsey Graham, and the love he had for his family is really the most important part of his journey. It started as he was a 19-year-old kid at the University of South Carolina. His mother dies of cancer, and 15 months later, his dad has a massive heart attack, and he's gone. And Lindsey actually adopts his 13-year-old sister. And that misery and painful journey leads him to the United States Senate, and it makes him very sensitive to people. He loves bringing people together. I remember him at my wedding, Gail. He was talking to this little kid named Case, and he was just making a joke that for a three-year-old, he had no expectation that that kid would ever see Social Security, and all the adults just laughed, and you just felt people getting a little closer, even at my wedding, as Lindsey became the comedian in tow. So it was just so fantastic to have that in the Senate with us, but also as a friend, just someone who always was bringing people together through humor.
You know, it's interesting to see the praise coming in from both sides of the aisle about him. That I've heard people say he was able to do things that other senators could not. you know, that regardless of how you felt about some of his some of his positions, there was always a way that you could talk to Lindsey Graham. You think that that's true?
Gail, it's 100% true. One of the things I'd say is his wit and his humor brought our the Senate colleagues together. Whether it was Cory Booker or Bernie Sanders, Lindsey Graham would look for something in common. And if they could find it, he'd work with them on it. And sometimes he'd be criticized for crossing the aisle. But Lindsey Graham was oblivious to that kind of criticism because he felt like if it was good for America, just do it. And we need more folks in public office who appreciate the value of friendship and common ground. You do not have to surrender your values to find a path forward. Lindsey never did. He never surrendered his values, but he always found the path that led to a better America. And sometimes it didn't work out, but he didn't care. He'd come right back to it again. And that really is why so many people have great passion for him, sometimes against him, but 90% of the time for him. And that made him not only a great legislator, it made him a good statesman for the country.
Senator Scott, this is Jolene Kent, and I was just wondering what you thought was on Senator Graham's minds in these final days. He was working right up to the end. He was in Ukraine. He had spoken with the president. Yes. What do you think was going through his mind?
Well, there's no doubt that Lindsey Graham, as a former JAG officer, 30 years plus serving in the military, really loved foreign policy. And he believed that America had a responsibility to solve problems here at home, but around the world. And so the Ukraine conflict there, he had spent at least 10 visits to Ukraine because he wanted to save as many lives as humanly possible. He wanted to stop the aggression of Russia. He wanted us to resource Ukraine and make sure that as quickly as possible that the resolution would come to the table. He felt like he was very close. When you hear him talk to the president on Friday, he felt like there was a deal that was imminent that could help save more lives. And talking to Lindsey behind the scenes, he always talked about the importance of peace. He would use strength to get there, but he was always focused on peace.
Senator Scott, we only have 30 seconds here. I just wanted to know, I know it's rather soon, but curious to know, he had four terms in the U.S. Senate. Who would you like to see run for his seat and take on his legacy?
Well, I think there are a number of people that could do so. I will say I hope that the governor will put a placeholder and let the voters decide. And so I think in the next several hours or next day or so, we'll figure out who that person is. I love Trey Gowdy. Jim DeMint has been in the conversation. His sister would be a wonderful placeholder as well. So we've got lots of candidates who could hold the place so that the voters decide. And remember, the election starts August the 11th in South Carolina. So 3 weeks from now, we'll have a primary process.
The clock is ticking. That's the first time I've heard his sister in the mix. Thank you very much, Senator Tim Scott.
You never know.
You never know. You're absolutely right about that. We thank you for your time this morning.
Yes, ma'am.
Time for a look at the stories that caught our eye. Kicking things off for us on this Monday, she's trying to say, is a lovely Chanel call. Chanel, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning, guys. Good to see you. So we begin this morning with news. The Trump administration has issued subpoenas to several New York Times reporters over their coverage of alleged security issues with the new Air Force One. So the Times is saying some of the journalists were visited at their homes by federal agents on Friday. The paper had reported that the plane donated by Qatar does not have the same defensive security features as the previous presidential jet. In a statement, the Department of Justice said, quote, reporters are not the targets. Those leaking classified information are. The subpoenas seek to force the journalist to testify before a grand jury later on this week. All right, next for us this morning, a rescue operation now underway to help save 30 beluga whales stranded at an abandoned theme park. Marineland in Ontario, Canada, which I have actually visited many, many a time when I was younger, closed to the public back in 2024 after being cited by the Canadian government for animal welfare concerns. So the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation reports the whales are set to be moved to aquariums here in the U.S. and Spain. Now, once underway, the transfer is expected to take a couple of weeks. Next for us, it was life imitating art for Ted Lasso actor Christo Fernandez. So over the weekend, Fernandez made his pro soccer debut for El Paso Locomotive FC. This was in a match against New Mexico United. So much like his character, Danny Rojas, Fernandez is a forward for the team. Unfortunately, though, no TV ending in this one. New Mexico defeating El Paso 2-0. Sorry to those Ted Lasso fans. Finally for us this morning, what would you pay for a piece of the field where the World Cup final is going to be played? This, take a look at it, is a piece of the pitch from the official FIFA store. The field fragment, here it is encased in acrylic. It will, of course, ship after the final is played on July 19th. Bad news, Bears, if you are looking to buy one, it is already sold out. You guys were laughing. Yeah. How much do you think you're going to pay for that?
So people are buying it. I would say $300.
$49.99? Yeah, I'd go with something like $25. I don't know. I don't even know. Okay. How can you tell it's even real?
Gail was the closest.
I would say 300, but just because of the significance of it.
Mm-hmm. So it's $450. You can't buy them.
$450?
But listen, I think it sounds
steep.
But if you think about it, some of the tickets for the finals are going for like $19,000. Right. So, I mean, it's a little memorabilia from the game.
Exactly.
Expensive.
Yeah, very expensive. A little too rich for my blood, Chanel. Thank you very much, though.
Thanks.
All right. Imagine waking up one day and being told the home your family has lived in for years is going to be demolished to help power the AI boom, and there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. That is what is happening to some homeowners in Georgia. They've been given an ultimatum: sell your home or the state will take it. Utility giant Georgia Power is planning to build a new transmission line so it can handle new data centers. Skylar Henry has more from a county just outside Atlanta.
I'm a single mom. I worked hard for everything.
How do you put a price on a home you never intended to sell? One filled with more than two decades of memories.
I think I was 5 or 6 when this was built.
The yard where you buried your pets. The greenhouse that fed your family.
When you talk about what being on this property means to you,
yeah,
right? It's y'all's.
It's ours. It's our family. We belong here.
But Ansley Brown's childhood home likely won't be here much longer. That's because the state's largest utility, Georgia Power, says it needs the area to make way for a 35-mile-long transmission line.
Georgia Power has been here for as long as Ansley's mother has owned this property. It's just beyond the tree line. Now, with the expansion of this latest project, they're looking to take the 2.5 acres the house sits on.
Georgia Power says increasing demand has outpaced the capacity of its existing grid, and building a new transmission line requires acquiring more than 300 parcels of land, including residential properties.
What did your mom tell you she wanted for this property to be?
Generational wealth, true generational wealth was the idea, and now it's being stripped from us.
Georgia Power estimates 70% to 80% of the power on this new line is expected to help serve data centers. It says the remaining 20% to 30% of power will serve the state's growing residential and commercial demand.
Georgia Power told us that they feel as if they've done this process responsibly. What would you say to that?
I disagree. You can't tear down 35 miles of rural Georgia and it not hurt something or somebody. And to say that you're doing it in the name of data centers is a slap in the face to us, our community, our animals.
Brown's mother recently came to an agreement with Georgia Power to sell. Brown says if she didn't, the utility could have sought to acquire her property through eminent domain, a legal process that allows private property to be taken with compensation for projects determined to serve a public purpose.
All power generation starts somewhere.
Holly Lovett is a Georgia Power spokesperson.
Eminent domain is always, you know, a last resort for us, and it's something we never want to do.
To us, it's theft. It's literally a $1 billion company stealing land from smaller people, people who can't fight back. We don't have the money to fight Georgia Power.
So that's why a few months ago, Ansley took her story to TikTok.
My childhood home is being taken by Georgia Power.
She began sharing stories of others in similar situations.
What is it taking from her? Look behind me. It's taking this entire backyard.
What do you say to someone who will push back on any sort of offer that's out there and say, well, a price tag can't replace memories?
Oh, gosh. You know, it almost makes me emotional because I have those memories in like my house, and I get how deeply personal people's homes are. I would just say that we see you and we hear you, and we want this process to be respectful and transparent, and that is going to ultimately benefit you.
Brown doesn't buy that, and while she knows it's too late to save her home, she says she doesn't want to see this happen to anyone else.
My mom wants an apology. She wants an apology from Georgia Power. That's it.
And it's because of how she feels as if she's been treated?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for an entire year, they have bullied her. And there is no sorry. So that's what we want. We want an apology from Georgia Power.
When asked if the utility company is willing to apologize, Georgia Power told us they have worked hard to be transparent, negotiate in good faith, and make this process as easy as possible. As for the data centers and who is behind them, Georgia Power told us it doesn't publish lists of customers to protect safety and security. Guys, this is obviously
big story.
You know, it's one of those things that we've talked about for months now. Yes. These data centers, communities, obviously not in my backyard. But I think the real crux of this argument here is, what do you say to people who've owned these properties for 20, 30 years? And it's like, you got
to
go.
And you feel the emotion. It's interesting to me that Georgia Power says we've tried to make this process as easy as possible. Their definition of easy as possible is very different from what these families are experiencing. It's still hard to believe there's nothing they can do. Nothing.
And the reality is that you're looking at this is going to happen more and more because you're going to need over the next 20 years, 10 to 20 years, 10 to 15% more power than is being generated right now in the United States. That's probably 100 nuclear reactors if you have to generate 110 gigawatts.
How do you put a price tag on this? Truly.
You can't.
It is so tough.
Skylar, we thank you.
It's an ailment millions are living with, and we may be learning something new about it. Chronic inflammation is characterized by symptoms like fatigue, muscle ache, and headaches. It's also been linked to cancer, type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, and stroke. New research suggests it could also be affecting people's mental and cognitive health. Best-selling author and CBS News contributor Dr. Mark Hyman is here this morning to talk more about it. Good morning. Good to see
you. Good morning. Good to see you.
So you've called chronic inflammation a hidden fire in our bodies. So what exactly is it and what causes it?
Well, our bodies are affecting our brain. And mental health is really coming from what's happening inside the rest of our system. And our diet, our lifestyle, lack of exercise, our ultra-processed food, the amount of sugar we're eating, stress we're having, the lack of sleep, all those are driving inflammation. And it doesn't just affect your body, it affects your brain. Mm. And it doesn't show up as a sore joint, it shows up as depression or anxiety or bipolar disease or more severe problems. And so we actually know the linkage now between our inflammatory lifestyle and inflammation in the brain and depression. And you can actually treat it by addressing the inflammation, and you can actually test to see if you're inflamed.
Is there a difference between men and women in terms of inflammation?
Yes.
Does one get it more than the other?
There is. And we know for women tend to get more autoimmune disease, more inflammatory diseases, more Alzheimer's. So there is a linkage. It has to do with the X chromosome. The data is still sort of emerging on how that works. But there definitely is a higher linkage of inflammation in women.
So if you want to combat this, you say it's the foods that we eat.
Yeah.
Right? Should we be avoiding? What should we lean into?
Well, the first thing
is no cupcakes.
You want to test.
Kill my joy.
No hot dogs.
Yeah.
You want to test what's going on because people don't know what's happening in their bodies. They don't know they have insulin resistance or prediabetes, which is affecting half of Americans. They don't know they have vitamin D deficiency or omega-3 deficiencies. Inflammation levels are high. We see that in Function Health, a company I co-founded, with over 46% with high inflammation. So people are inflamed. They need to know what's going on. Second, they need to look at their lifestyle. Diet is the biggest factor. So we're eating an inflammatory diet, 60% ultra-processed food, lots of sugar, lots of starch, low fiber, low plants. I mean, we're just not eating a diet that's anti-inflammatory. So we want to move towards that, which is a diet that's rich in whole foods, rich in omega-3 fats from wild fatty fish. It's rich in lots of colorful plants, has lots of fiber, fermented foods. All those change your inflammation levels, particularly your microbiome, because you're feeding not just you, you're feeding this whole environment of bugs in your gut, and that's driving tons of inflammation. So there's a lot of ways to fix it, and so exercise fixes it, sleep fixes it.
But you said diet is the most important thing, more important than exercise and sleep, because I keep hearing more and more about sleep.
Yeah, sleep is important, Dale, you know that. but diet is the biggest driver of inflammation in our society, and that's why we're seeing such like you mentioned at the top of the show, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, Alzheimer's. These are all inflammatory problems, including mental health, and people don't make that connection. So that's why this is so important. People understand people are either depressed or they're anxious, or they have more serious mental illnesses like, for example, schizophrenia or even bipolar disease. People at Stanford and Harvard are now studying these dietary interventions, which are showing dramatic effects in actually reversing these chronic problems in mental health.
you know, it's not something you feel, right? In other words,
you don't feel it.
You don't feel inflamed. Yeah. So how does a doctor test for it?
Well, in other words, your brain is inflamed. It doesn't hurt because, like, your brain doesn't have pain receptors. Right.
So it's not like sciatica.
No. So I co-founded a company called Functional Health, and we do expensive testing, looking at C-reactive protein, an inflammation marker, looking at omega-3 fats. About 90% of Americans are lower or insufficient levels of omega-3s, which are very anti-inflammatory. We look at things like the insulin resistance, which is pre-diabetes. We can measure insulin, we can measure your blood sugar, hemoglobin A1C, other factors that drive the problem. So it's a metabolic problem. There's a whole department of metabolic psychiatry at Stanford that studies the metabolic problem in the brain that comes from our diet.
Yeah, but to Vlad's point, you don't feel it, so you have to get diagnosed by a doctor.
That's right. The testing is important and the diagnosis is important, yeah.
Well, Dr. Mark Hyman, thanks for those tips. We appreciate it so much. And ahead, we're looking at the hottest travel trends this summer, including something called set jetting. You don't know what that is? I don't. We've got an expert in studio to explain when we come back. If you are planning a summer vacation, listen up. One of this year's biggest travel trends is called set jetting. It's when travelers seek destinations that are featured in TV shows and movies. Henley Vasquez is a seasoned travel advisor and co-founder of the travel agency Fora. Good morning, Henley.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You saw this trend take off after season 2 of The White Lotus. What happened?
So season 2, White Lotus comes out, it's Sicily, and then within 2 months, there's a 900% increase at Fora of bookings. So nary a room to be had in Sicily, and that was just the second season.
And now they're shooting in Saint-Tropez.
They are shooting in Saint-Tropez and in Cannes. And the wild thing is that this show is not even out yet, and we're still seeing bookings booming. So it's gotten so powerful, we don't even need to see the show in order to want to go there. Wow.
So my first thought when I heard about this was like, I'd go visit the Brady Bunch house, right? But you're talking about a next level.
Next level.
It's next level.
So like Yellowstone, that kind of stuff?
We all want to be a cowboy now. We've seen a huge increase in dude ranches as well in terms of what people are planning for their families.
The hottest travel destination. Number one, is set jetting a term you guys made up?
I don't know if I can take credit for that, but you know, if you want to give
it to me. But it makes sense. So what is the hottest travel destination this summer?
Honestly, it's not a destination. It's a movable destination. It's a cruise ship.
Oh,
really? Why is that?
Yeah. Yes, that is, I would say, having been in travel for 20 years, this is the biggest change that I've seen, which is now people who never would have taken a cruise are. You have Four Seasons with the yacht, Ritz-Carlton.
Oh, the luxury.
With the yacht. And Orient Express. So now there's a
I've done the Orient Express. That was very cool.
It's amazing.
Well, so cruises are big. You're talking about the luxury cruises.
The luxury cruises are big. And even the way that the more sort of mass market cruises have leveled up their offerings for families, for singles, is pretty incredible. So to me, the hottest destination is actually the one that takes you to different places.
And these are all-inclusive options, right? So you go and you can just do whatever your heart desires. Why are we seeing such an uptick in that? It used to all be about independence and charting your own path.
And we still love that too. But I think given the price and some of the complications of travel right now with cruise and all-inclusive, what we see is that sort of desire to turn your brain off, not have to sign a check every time your kid has a bite of an ice cream, and to be able to just enjoy your vacation.
When I heard of all-inclusive, though, I used to think that it was considered very mass market. Yeah.
I thought that, Gail, my first thought was college Cancun.
Yes, that's still there.
Me too.
Okay.
But you're talking about a different kind of all-inclusive.
A different kind of all-inclusive. And again, yes, that is still there and it is great for the young ones, but I think there's a more mature all-inclusive that has come out with more boutique options. Hyatt has done a great job with this, where you have beautiful rooms and excellent food, which I think is not something we used to think
excellent
of as
food.
All-inclusive.
Mm.
We're already go ahead.
What about, you said something about coolcations.
Well,
what is
that?
Because it's very hot. Yeah.
Yes, it's hot out. So I do think that the heat wave, and I'm sure you know, you have been talking about this, how it's impacted people's perceptions of going places, have said, if it's too hot in Paris, maybe I'll head north. Maybe I'll go to Iceland, to Scandinavia, here closer to home, to Canada, where I can be outside and active and not quite so steamed.
I'm curious to know, we're already sitting at mid-July.
Yes,
if you're
yes.
still planning something, how do you do it and not overspend?
You and everybody
else. Where to go?
So one, tell me, where are people going? We're talking about the trends. Don't go there. go off the beaten path, go off season. Caribbean and Mexico is a great choice to get last minute availability and last minute value. The other thing is our platform actually monitors all of the prices. So don't be scared to book. Go ahead, get the room that you want through your advisor. You'll get notified if the price changes. So if it goes down, you'll still get the best value. And I think that's really important. Don't sit on the sidelines, jump in.
What's your favorite vacation? If you were making a recommendation, where should we go?
Gosh.
Less than 30 seconds, Henley. Where should we go?
In August. I will say that Rome is the number one booked European city for Fora this summer.
Yeah.
And I'm a big fan. Beautiful hotels, great history, and endless amounts
and
of pizza and pasta.
Yes, and the food.
What's not to love? Henley Vasquez, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
The World Cup is helping people find L-O-V-E love. Woo. Some singles are turning watch parties into a chance to make a real connection. Professional matchmaker Maria
Avgatidis
is here with her tips on how to use the tournament to kick off a new romance. I remember that name. She's a fourth generation matchmaker and the founder of Agape Matchmaking. We're so glad, Maria, to have you back in the studio because, as you know, discussed it with you a lot. It's hard out here for a pimp. So asking for a friend that kind of looks like me.
World Cup plans?
I know. I haven't been to a World Cup game. Sounds like that's where I need to go. But what is it? Number one, I love the graphic. Our graphics department. You go, Carlos. I love the soccer balls and all that around the stadium. But what is it about the World Cup that you're finding is helping when it comes to finding a match?
It's very similar to when the Knicks won in 5. We are experiencing collective effervescence.
Yes.
Collective effervescence is a term that Emil Durkheim came up with in 1912. It's the phenomenon when a group of people are having a similar reaction at the same time. Think about like New Year's when we're all counting down and most of us are elated about the new year.
Yes.
You have this collective emotion. You see this at the Knicks. You see this at World Cup games right now.
You see it at a concert.
Beyonce,
Jay-Z, Taylor Swift, when you're singing the words together. You know this, Jolene.
Good.
When you're singing the words together, it's just there is a bonding. Okay.
Yeah, shared bond.
It's
and also
a memory you're making right then and there.
And natural icebreaker, right?
Uh-huh.
You
yes.
don't have yes. to invent things to talk yes. to someone. You're watching someone on stage, right? What's your favorite Jay-Z song? Who are you rooting for today? Because, you know, let's face it, the United States is not in the semis or the finals. But who are you rooting for today? What heritage are you
still
adopting?
So you've seen the dating apps, are they decreasing during the World Cup?
I think they're increasing for certain people in certain cities.
Okay.
Like the Scottish, when they took over Boston, they were on Tinder.
Ooh.
But I don't think that should stop you, right? Don't let geography stop you from having a conversation, being curious, because at the end of the day, we can always figure it out later if there's a connection. Geography is okay. There are flights. FaceTime is free.
FaceTime is free.
We forget.
But be open to the LDR, the long distance relationship.
Yeah, you could be open to it, but I'd rather you just be open to a conversation. And what I'm trying to say here is that take the opportunity of the World Cup this week. This is your last week to take the advantage of it. There's a natural icebreaker. People are experiencing a bonded emotion. You know, people say, you know, the European soccer commentators keep telling us that football is beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah, because we get to have a shared...
Football is beautiful, and so are you.
Hey, Vlad
still got it.
Vlad is taken.
Still got it. No, but... yes, I am taken.
And you are very
still
taken, Vlad.
You got it.
You are very taken.
No, Maria, one of the things that's interesting, I go watch France every week when France is playing, and there's a huge party. Everybody's meeting each other, and you're vibing over the concert over the match.
Same,
but
you
say a common mistake is losing momentum after you meet someone, that initial fire.
So let me tell you a really funny story. One of my employees is currently single. Shout out to Gabby. And I've been giving her beer money every time she goes to World Cup game. It's like a fun little thing, like beer's on me.
Beer money,
And what it's doing is that she's going out. She's meeting new people. She's not having the social atrophy. Like, she's okay with getting rejected. As a result, though, she met someone at one of these games.
Mm.
And guess what? They had a second date yesterday. I'm still waiting to find out what happened,
okay.
But because she's going out, because she's experiencing, you know, the physical therapy of our emotions here, essentially.
Mm. Maria,
you got to put yourself out there.
You got to put yourself out there. What better than a soccer game to do it? Mm. Thank you so much, Maria, for
Absolutely.
Being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Up next, Beg Knows America.
Yeah, you know what time it is. Time for the stories that are the talk of the table this morning. Jolene, Since you're our guest, you're in full position. Hey.
Well, thank you for having me today, guys.
Yeah, we try to be good hosts.
We are very good hosts.
You are the warmest host, and I have one that is very relatable to my life, A Flight from Hell, the reason a screaming out of control toddler. A person recently shared on Reddit that their flight landed 1 hour late because a 3-year-old child could not be made to sit in his seat. Apparently, he was too old to sit safely in his parents' lap. I know about that. And so after a lot of screaming from the child, the parents were forced to deboard, as in get off the plane. The person says the kid and their, quote, incompetent parents, ouch,
come on,
inconvenienced everyone, adding that they would seriously pay extra to go on an adult-only flight. I have been there. We've got 3 little ones. Yeah. In fact, we had such a challenging flight the other day. We had passengers coming up being like, are you guys okay? First time parents?
Yeah.
Third time parents. It happens to all of us.
Yes, it does. And so, we were all children at one point. Our parents had to deal with us. And I can't believe that this person did not share a little bit more. I get it. I used to be like the swinging bachelor who got on a plane and was
and
like,
and you would be annoyed.
I would be a little annoyed, but I would never say anything to anybody.
No, of course not.
I never thought it was enough to say that the parents are incompetent. Sometimes children are, they may be sick.
Yeah.
Or maybe something going on.
You never know. Maybe they're hangry.
Haven't you seen kids that are just out of control and then 2 seconds later they're watching their tablet or they're eating?
Exactly.
I think once you have children, you become a lot more empathetic and sympathetic to that because it's a temporary phrase. That I don't think that's bad parenting at all.
No.
My talk of the table.
You're a good parent, Jolene.
We have not been kicked off a plane yet. I will say that. So fingers crossed.
He's a very good parent. My talk of the table is more of that epic time at Jay-Z's concert this weekend at Yankee Stadium. As we mentioned earlier, thousands of fans had to wait for hours for the show to start last night because people bum-rushed the door very bad. But the excitement stayed very high. During the delay, I decided, you know, I would check in with other concert goers to see what they were thinking.
So the show was supposed to start at 9.
Yes.
Very close to midnight. Why are we still here?
I have no idea. I wish I would tell you, I promise I would, but I have no idea.
Okay, Shamira, is this show gonna happen?
It needs to happen, it has to happen. We've been waiting out here for hours. We got these beautiful, surrounded by all these people, your fans, we love Jay-Z. We're just ready to go.
Show is supposed to start at 9, and you say what?
We're here, I've been waiting all day. It's gonna happen, baby!
It's now 11:38.
Yes.
Okay, what are you thinking?
I'm just saying, this history, Dale, you gotta look at it, the positive of everything, and this is history. This is so legendary. There's so much love. Everybody wanna come see this show. This is the third night. Did you come last? I seen you last night, right?
Yes, I was here last night.
You seen the energy last night?
Yes. No, yes.
Since he was 9. In fact, I got hooked on Jay-Z because of Will. You know, that song gave me that sweet, that gushy stuff. He was playing it at 9. I go, what are you listening to? You can't listen to that. Fast forward to me and Will. Diamonds up! Give me that sweet, that gushy stuff. Me and Will side by side. Will knows every song. He said going to the concert made him feel like he was in middle school.
Oh,
Will is lovely wife,
look at that
Elise,
smile.
And Kirby's best friend, Erica. Then Officer Smith was someone who was escorting me around when we were walking through the venue, and I said, I can't believe that I'm still here. Either we're dedicated or crazy, he goes, but maybe you're a little bit of both. I think that's true. A lot of famous people in the crowd yesterday that showed up because they wanted to support Jay-Z. Look, there's Carl Anthony Towns.
Oh, snap! What?
Ruben, Gordon Woods,
what?
Jason Tatum.
Wow.
Michael's partner, Camille.
Okay,
Rihanna,
now, Gail, that is the money shot.
Wow.
Right after.
Frame that one.
There's Travis Scott. It was... But people were dragging me or ragging on me saying, Gail, no, not everybody had a good time. Some people left early. Very few people, Alvin Patrick talking to
you. Alvin Patrick, who works here at CBS.
Yeah, very few people left early. Most people stayed because you're thinking you've invested all this time and you kept hearing, he's coming, he's coming, he's coming.
What time did you go home, Gail? How late did you stay out?
I'm embarrassed to tell you. 2:17.
Respect. I love it. And you're right here this morning. It's incredible.
It's Monday, and that means it's time for Beg Knows America, where CBS News contributor David Begno finds the heart in every story. Today, we are continuing our special Dear David month, focusing on stories you've recommended. Here's David and a special friend.
Good morning. So we're dedicating the month of July to Dear David stories, which are stories sent in to us by viewers like you. We're going to start with a guy cleaning up the streets of New York City, and then introduce you to the veteran who is helping to find lost pets. But we'll start with a little pep talk, what you say, Paddington? Roll it.
I wish they had pencils.
In this sunny Seattle neighborhood.
I kind of noticed it when I was walking my dog.
My kids very excitedly came home to tell me that they found this magical box.
This one says, you have lots of friends.
Is a little yellow box tucked into an ivy-covered fence. Inside, there are note cards and a prompt. Make one, take one. Last year, writer Caroline Catlin started the Little Free Pep Talk Library so her neighbors could brighten up each other's days.
You got this.
When she could have used some major cheering up herself.
I was diagnosed with incurable brain cancer in January of 2019.
Caroline learned that she had a brain tumor when she was 27 years old. The cancer typically recurs 3 to 5 years from diagnosis. Caroline is now in year 8.
I think I learned the impact of small moments of kindness when I was in the hospital, because there would be little things that nurses would do. It couldn't fix the situation, but it would make it feel so much more gentle, whether that was like bringing an extra glass of water or a blanket or whatever it is. And I just wanted to create more of that in the world.
So she put up the box.
It's kind of like the Little Free Libraries, but pep talks instead.
It worked.
When I saw the mailman, he wrote one down and left it. And I think it said, tough times pass, but tough people last.
She also gave out free flowers from her garden.
Yeah, I just left a little post-it note. She was like, hey, I'm Jason. Like, I've been taking your flowers every day. And I lost my mom in June. And later that day, she came by and left a beautiful bouquet and a book on grieving.
In the time that she could have spent just frozen and stunned from the diagnosis, Caroline's gone to grad school, got married, bought a house.
I wasn't willing to live a life where I let my diagnosis make the choices for me.
Living for others and herself.
It makes me feel like I'm doing something good.
This is day 4 of Cleaning New York.
Cleaning a block a day. And that's the root of the whole mission. If I can clean a block a day, you can too.
Yeah, this is a good one.
This movement has brought together the best of people, and I'm so proud to be a part of the mission.
I'm not asking people to clean a whole block. I'm asking them to clean what's right in front of their building for a couple minutes a day.
There's something pretty satisfying about watching David Clark's videos. One swipe of a grabber, one overflowing tree bed, one trash-strewn sidewalk transformed. In the spring, the 24-year-old hit record and started cleaning the streets around his New York apartment. He thought maybe a few neighbors would notice. Instead, millions did.
It wasn't meant to be something huge. It was meant to be something very small for my neighborhood.
Cleaning is an act of love.
All fueled by simple before and after moments. And a reminder that making a difference doesn't always have to be that complicated.
Recently, it's all positivity, which is something I've never experienced in New York. People are happy in the streets. So it's an exciting moment, definitely.
We're restoring this tree bed to test whether a more beautiful street could become a cleaner street.
We redid the bed completely, dug it up, put in soil, put in mulch, planted flowers, and even built an entire tree bed and garden and painted it. And it was the most amazing thing, seeing that go up and having every single neighbor that walked by say thank you and be so appreciative.
The community support so far has been great. Thank you all for your kind words, and let's keep this project going.
By taking care of our communities, we extend our homes out onto the sidewalk.
You guys are doing great.
Turns out a cleaner block can do a lot more than just brighten the street. It can inspire a city.
We got storm coming in, a tornado warning, and some torrential downpour.
Drone pilot Sam Aroman is talking us through a pet rescue in real time.
How are we going to do this?
Using a thermal drone to track a missing dog named Somi as a storm closes in over Cape Cod.
I mean, we can't have this dog keep on going all over the place out in this marsh.
3 days earlier, the tiny Pomeranian disappeared into the marsh.
We were in the woods looking for her.
Her family, Raja Sinjab, and her husband, Connor O'Reilly, frantically searched the area.
Good, 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 good. Here we go. Thank God. She's crying.
Helping reunite families with lost pets has become Sam's mission, but it also helped him find something
he was searching for himself.
This grounds me, helping people out.
After serving in the United States Navy, Sam says adjusting to civilian life was pretty difficult.
I struggled post-service for years and with PTSD and triggers, anxiety. One of the VA psychologists decided, hey, take up on a hobby, so I did. And I went to Best Buy and bought myself a drone.
What began as therapy became purpose. Now every search gives him purpose, and he's built a business around that calling.
But guess what? It's helping me, helping families reunite pets with back together.
Get this. Sam has helped to reunite more than 230 pets with their families.
You guys are so scared.
And now it's time for the call out. We are looking for more stories about everyday people doing extraordinary things. You got one? Email us, would you? Send it to our team at DearDavid@davidbegno.com. Before we go, Paddington and I have an exclusive preview for you of today's episode of the Person Who Believed in Me podcast. My guest today is Adam Lambert.
I started having moments of shame for being gay once I got famous.
I read that ABC threatened to sue you.
Yeah, I kissed a guy.
Oh, that moment.
That moment. Well, this is a double standard, and this is BS.
How has fame not made you more closed off, cautious, quiet?
I always love David's pieces because, listen, everybody seems so, many people feel so short-tempered these days. Mm-hmm. David just reminds us this once again, there's always some people doing good things in this country.
And it's
always
Adam Lambert. I love Adam Lambert.
Always.
And it doesn't have to be complicated to make a little bit of a difference, right?
Not.
We love that.
We can all do something today, and that'll do it for us. We will see you tomorrow right here on CBS Mornings. Same time, same bat channel for your favorite morning show. Yeah, I said it.
Bye.
Take it easy.
Have a good day.